Great Hearts Northern Oaks, 9th grade biology. Readings for Tuesday, April 7th, chapter 14, pages 282 through 286. Page 282. Earth's History. If spontaneous generation does not happen on Earth today, then the question remains, how did cell-based life arise in the first place? The key to answering this question lies in scientific hypotheses that conditions on early Earth were very different from present conditions. Scientists continue to form and test these hypotheses by modeling conditions and processes that could have given rise to the first cellular life on Earth. The formation of Earth. Evidence from computer models of the Sun suggests that about 5 billion years ago, our solar system was a swirling mass of gas and dust, as shown in Figure 14-4. Over time, most of this material was pulled together by gravity and formed the Sun. The remaining gas, dust, and debris circled the young Sun. Scientists think that the planets formed through repeated collisions of this space debris. During a 400 million year period, Earth grew larger as gravity pulled in more debris. The collisions between Earth and space debris also released a great deal of thermal energy. Some collisions would have released enough energy to melt large portions of Earth's surface. Earth's age. The estimated age of Earth, more than 4 billion years, is about 700,000 times as long as the period of recorded history. It is about 50 million times as long as an average human lifespan. How can we determine what happened so long ago? Scientists have explored Earth's surface and examined its many layers to establish a fairly complete picture of its geologic history. Early estimates of Earth's age were made from studying layers of sedimentary rock in Earth's crust. The age of Earth could not be estimated accurately. However, until the middle of the 20th century, when modern methods of establishing the age of materials were developed. Radiometric dating. Methods of establishing the age of materials include the techniques known as radiometric dating. Recall that the atomic number of an element is the number of protons in the nucleus. All atoms of an element have the same atomic number, but their number of neutrons can vary. Atoms of the same element that differ in the number of neutrons they contain are called isotopes. Most elements have several isotopes. Page 283. The mass number of an isotope is the total number of protons and neutrons in the nucleus. The mass number of the most common carbon isotope is 12. If you recall that the atomic number of carbon is 6, you can calculate that this carbon isotope has 6 protons and 6 neutrons. Isotopes are designed by their chemical name followed by their mass number. For example, carbon exists in both carbon-12 and carbon-14. Some isotopes have unstable nuclei, which undergo radioactive decay. That is, their nuclei release particles of radiant energy, or both, until the nuclei become stable. Such isotopes are called radioactive isotopes. Rates of decay of radioactive isotopes have been determined for many isotopes. The length of time it takes for one half of any size sample of an isotope to decay to a stable form is called the half-life of the isotope. Depending on the isotope, half-lives vary from a fraction of a second to billions of years. The quantity of a particular radioactive isotope in a material can be measured to determine the material's age. This amount is compared with that of some other substance whose quantity in the material remains constant over time. For example, organic materials can be dated by comparing the amount of carbon-14, a radioactive isotope, with the amount of carbon-12, a stable isotope. Living things take carbon into their bodies constantly. Most of the carbon is in the form of carbon-12. A very small proportion of it, however, is in the form of carbon-14, which undergoes decay. This ratio of carbon-14 to carbon-12 is a known quantity for living organisms. Page 284. When an organism dies, its uptake of carbon stops, and decay of the existing carbon-14 continues. Thus, over time, the amount of carbon-14 declines with respect to the original amount of the stable carbon-12. After 5,730 years, half of the carbon-14 in a sample will have decayed. After another 5,730 years, half of the remaining carbon-14 in the sample likewise will have decayed. Use of carbon-14 dating is limited to organic remains less than about 60,000 years old, such as the leather quiver and wooden bow and arrows shown in figure 14-5. Isotopes with longer half-lives are used to date older rocks. Radioactive isotopes occur naturally in all matter. Some of the isotopes commonly used in radiometric dating procedures appear in Table 14-1. Radiometric dating is accurate within certain limits. The techniques depend on making careful measurements and obtaining samples that are uncontaminated with more recent material. Scientists compare several types of independent measurements to determine a range of plausible dates. Scientists have estimated Earth's age by using a dating method that is based on the decay of uranium and thorium isotopes in rock crystals. Collisions between Earth and large pieces of space debris probably caused the surface of Earth to melt many times as the planet was formed. Therefore, the age of the oldest unmelted surface rock should tell us when these collisions stopped and the cooling of Earth's surface began. The oldest known rocks and crystals are about 4 billion years old. So, scientists infer that organic molecules began to accumulate about 4 billion years ago. First organic compounds. All of the elements found in organic compounds are thought to have existed on Earth and in the rest of the solar system when the Earth formed. But how and where were these elements assembled into organic compounds? An important hypothesis to solve this puzzle was proposed in the 1920s by two scientists, Soviet Alexander I. Oparin, who lived from 1894 to 1980, and American John B. S. Haldane, who lived from 1892 to 1964. They thought that the early atmosphere contained ammonia, NH3, hydrogen gas, H2, water vapor, H2O, and compounds made of hydrogen and carbon, such as methane, CH4. Page 285. According to Oparin, at high temperatures, these gases might have formed simple organic compounds such as amino acids. When Earth cooled and water vapor condensed to form lakes and seas, these simple organic compounds would have collected in the water. Over time, these compounds could have entered complex chemical reactions fueled by energy from lightning and ultraviolet radiation. These reactions, Oparin reasoned, ultimately would have resulted in the macromolecules essential to life, such as proteins. Synthesis of organic compounds. Oparin carefully developed his hypotheses, but he did not perform experiments to test them. So in 1953, an American graduate student, Stanley L. Miller, born in 1930, and his professor, Harold C. Urey, born and lived from 1893 to 1981, set up an experiment using Oparin's hypotheses as a starting point. Their apparatus, illustrated in figure 14-6, included a chamber containing the gases Oparin assumed were present in the young Earth's atmosphere. As the gases circulated in the chamber, electric sparks, substituting for lightning, supplied energy to drive chemical reactions. The Miller-Urey experiment and other variations that have followed produced a variety of organic compounds, including amino acids. Since the 1950s, scientists have used similar experiments to test and revise hypotheses about the origin of simple organic compounds. In such experiments, scientists have combined a variety of chemicals and energy sources to produce an assortment of organic compounds, including amino acids, ATP, and nucleotides. Scientists are convinced that basic organic compounds could have formed on early Earth in many ways. Furthermore, scientists who study planet formation have proposed new hypotheses about early Earth's atmosphere. For example, one hypothesis holds that the atmosphere of early Earth was composed largely of carbon dioxide, CO2, nitrogen, N2, and water vapor, H2O. Laboratory simulations of these atmospheric conditions have shown that both carbon dioxide and oxygen gas interfere with the production of organic compounds. Therefore, the production of organic compounds might only have been possible in areas protected from the atmosphere, such as those that exist in undersea hot springs. Organic compounds from beyond Earth. Some scientists hypothesize that organic compounds could have been carried to Earth by debris from space. In 1970, a broad mixture of organic compounds was found in a newly fallen meteorite. Because the meteorite was recovered before it was contaminated with organic compounds from Earth, these compounds must have formed in space. So, organic compounds from space could have accumulated on the surface of early Earth. Page 286. From molecules to cell-like structures. Sidney Fox, who lived from 1912 to 1998, and others have done extensive research on the physical structures that may have given rise to the first cells. These cell-like structures, such as the ones shown in Figure 14-7, form spontaneously in the laboratory from solutions of simple organic chemicals. The structures include microspheres, which are spherical in shape and are composed of many protein molecules that are organized as a membrane, and coacervates, which are collections of droplets that are composed of molecules of different types, including lipids, amino acids, and sugars. For many years, it had been assumed that all cell structures and the chemical reactions of life required enzymes that were specified by the genetic information of the cell. Both coacervates and microspheres, however, can form spontaneously under certain conditions. For example, the polymers that form microspheres can arise when solutions of simple organic chemicals are dripped onto the surface of hot clay. The heat vaporizes the water, encouraging polymerization. Coacervates and microspheres have a number of cell-like properties, including the ability to take up certain substances from their surroundings. Coacervates can grow, and microspheres can bud to form smaller microspheres. These properties of coacervates and microspheres show that some important aspects of cellular life can arise without direction from genes. Thus, these studies suggest that the gap between the non-living chemical compounds and cellular life may not be quite as wide as previously thought. However, microspheres and coacervates do not have all of the properties of life. These cell-like structures do not have hereditary characteristics. Thus, these structures cannot respond to natural selection. Scientists are still investigating hypotheses about how living cells may have formed from simpler ingredients.